Before the show starts, just a quick apology, I guess. I accidentally was recording off the internal microphone on my computer instead of the external microphone I usually record on. Entirely my fault, but it means there's a bit of an echo whenever I'm talking, so sorry about that. Just imagine I'm in a really big room or something. Just for the first segment, though. After that, I figured it out, fixed it, all good. So, just the first few minutes. Anyway, on with the show.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, December 11th, 2015. It's just after 3:20 UTC as we're starting this. And I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Hello, my friend. Hello.
So I want to tell you right up front, our agenda for today, we are going to talk election 2016. We're going to follow up a little bit on the aftermath of the whole San Bernardino thing. So we're going to talk about, I guess, the additional stuff we know about the perpetrators since we talked last week. We're going to talk about Obama's speech. We're going to talk about the reaction relative to guns. But we're also going to talk about the reaction relative to terrorism and ISIS and all that kind of stuff, and how things sort of, depending on what you, the narrative kind of changed as people changed what they knew about the situation. So that's kind of interesting. And then we didn't really have a third big topic, so we'll just do a lightning round after that.
Uh-huh.
That's the plan. But I wanted to start off the show with one particular thing to note.
Which is?
This is that normally, for the last year, when I've done this show with Yvonne, I have had to plan in advance that if we were starting the show at a certain time, I would come up to my office and start Skype about an hour before that. Because Skype took about 45 minutes to start on my computer.
Yes, as you can see, all of you, Sam had a very highly sophisticated computer.
It required
quite a lot of, you know.
The hamsters were really running.
Oh, yeah.
It was almost 6 year old computer, over 5 years old, almost 6 year old computer. But I think more relevant was it was running a lot of stuff off external drives. The operating system was running off an external drive because the internal one had gone flaky at some point. And it's USB 2, so very slow, and that slowed things down more. Because it was never maxed out on memory. It was never maxed out on CPU. I think it was always issues with the drives that were slowing it down. But in any case, I started Skype today before the show. How long do you think it took to start, Yvonne? I timed it.
20 seconds.
10. Well, actually, 9.5 seconds.
Wow.
So from 45 minutes to 9.5 seconds, I estimated using 10 seconds. We're approximately 270 times faster. And the reason
for that's a substantial improvement.
The reason for this is, of course, I finally bit the bullet and I bought a new iMac.
Yay! Sam finally's got a new computer.
And it's all set up here, and I migrated the stuff I work on every day, but I also left behind on the old computer. I had a whole bunch of things running to keep track of various things, and so it is, you know, my webcam and blah blah blah, a bunch of other stuff, which is still running on the old computer, which is sitting a few feet away. And I left behind a lot of that stuff. So it's only got what I'm actually using. It's not running a whole bunch of stuff in the background either. That probably helps a little bit as well. And I, of course, like, you know, when I buy, I wait as long as I can between buying computers. I used to be on a 3 year cycle. We had other purchases. We had a car, we had a thing, we had blah. So I kept punting off the computer, but this year it was like, no, I can't wait another year. It's just not happening. But when I do buy a computer, on the theory that it'll make it so I can last as long as humanly possible, I max it out. So I have a maxed out iMac. I maxed out every possible option on the damn thing. So
what does that mean?
What does that mean? Let's see. I sent you. Well, let's see. See, I would have come prepared. But what that means is it's a Retina 5K iMac. 27 inches.
Okay.
4 gigahertz i7. 32 gigs of memory.
Okay.
With
how much disk space?
I got the 3 terabyte Fusion drive.
Okay.
So it's got the first 250 whatever's the first little bit is SSD, and then when you overflow that, it goes into a traditional hard drive. But the Mac Fusion drive tries to dynamically balance and put the things you use most often on the SSD. So anyway, it's got a, let's see, an AMD Radeon R9 with four gig of memory for the graphics card as well. So.
Wow.
Yeah. So I look, the bottom line here is this, just in my everyday operation, like on my old computer, very often, not all the time, but very often, like if I typed a sentence, I would type the sentence and then have to wait as I watched it catch up with my typing. Okay.
Oh God. Okay. Yeah.
I don't have to do that.
I don't know how the hell we freaking managed to record a podcast using that for this long.
But anyway, it's like the analogy I used. It's like for the last year, I've had, you know, a rhinoceros sitting on my chest, and it just got off, and now I can breathe again.
There you go. At least for a few more years.
Yeah, because now, like, I can do stuff. It's like, for the first few days, every time I clicked on something, I'd be like, I instinctually start like, okay, I'm going to wait. But by the time I even thought that, it was up on the screen already. And I'm like, oh my God, I clicked it and something happened, like, right away. Not, like, 10 minutes later. And,
okay.
I'm very happy. Of course, this probably means that come around March or something, I'll be like, yeah, we're eating ramen noodles for a month. But whatever, you know?
Oh, man. Okay. All right. So anyway.
So you got anything going on before we take a break and jump into...
Do I have anything going on? What do I have going on? I was in Times Square for a minute.
You sent me a picture from Times Square. It was very exciting. I've got it up looking at it right now.
I mean, I planned this trip like even after our podcast. I mean, this just came up like all of a sudden. I booked a trip like on Thursday last week, and I don't know. I just went in on Monday and came back on Tuesday. It was very fast. But I did see one interesting thing. So I was waiting at the airline club waiting for my flight. All of a sudden I see like the fire trucks come out on the tarmac, and I'm like, what are they doing? What are they doing? Practice or something? And I see this plane arrive that they're receiving it, and it's a very strange looking plane. And at first I was thinking, God, is that a 7878 or something or whatever? And then I realized that it was, I believe, the first flight to the U.S. of the brand new Airbus A350. Okay. So I happened to, and so they had a water cannon like a reception of it because it was his first flight.
Right.
And so I got to see that plane actually arrive to the U.S. for the first time.
Excellent.
It had a very funky look to it, I must say. It's just a little bit like, you know, how the shape of it is. It's just, you know, a lot of like modern changes. But that was like interesting. Me being a aviation buff, I thought that was interesting that I was able to witness that for the first time.
One of these days you have to come out and visit me because I'm a couple miles from Payne Field where Boeing does all this kind of stuff, testing, but also they're just oddball airplanes up there all the time. Like we had that big like Soviet era cargo plane here.
Oh yeah. The Antonov, the big one. Yeah.
A huge ass plane, tons of wheels on the bottom, funny looking thing. It was here a couple months ago. We had the big, like Boeing guppy looking things. We are here on a fairly regular basis.
Well, we have that. Well, there's that, actually, I don't know why they bring for maintenance like down here. There's a strange one that you probably see a few times over there, because they use it to ship parts for manufacturing at Boeing, the one called the Dreamlifter.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That plane is here in Miami all the time as well. Apparently, they do aircraft maintenance to that plane at a facility that's at Miami International Airport. So I see that thing there all the time. It's like interesting. Very, very weird looking plane, you know.
Yeah, and there are other oddball things occasionally, and the other thing you see, which with Miami International, you probably see a bunch of this stuff as well. But you see all kinds of planes from all kinds of carriers from all over the world, because they get built and they get their paint jobs here before they leave.
Yeah. Oh yeah. True.
So you see all kinds of things that are like, oh, okay, why is you know, name your random country. Why is that here? Well, because they just built the damn plane, you know, but.
Okay.
Anyway, that's it.
All right, cool.
Okay, let's take a break. And what do you want to do first, San Bernardino or election stuff?
I'll let you choose.
Oh, goody. Okay. I'll pull out the dice when we get back from break.
There you go. I like that. Hey, we should get the dice back. Beautiful. There you go. All right.
We'll be back right after this. And we are back after a bit of a detour, because we started recording the second segment and got about 10, maybe 15 minutes into it, until I realized that about 30 seconds in,
I really talked for 15 minutes.
I'm close.
Not recording any of it.
I apparently 30 seconds into the segment hit the stop button by mistake, and I never noticed it. And so, it was completely human error. It was not my new computer doing something funky, nothing like that. I apparently I hit the stop button.
Okay, I am like rather uninspired right now as to how the hell I repeat any of this shit again. How do we summarize whatever the fuck we just said?
Oh, so this is easy, because you talked a lot. So I just get to talk and give my point of view instead.
Right. Beautiful. Perfect. Go ahead.
So we did roll the dice, and we said we were doing election first. So there are a couple things I want to say. First of all, and we actually did not get to this in the last segment, but Yvonne wanted me to point out that on my electiongraphs.com site, I've had much more in the way of comments from people than I do on this site.
Well, right. And the reason I was yakking was because he was going to look up the vitriol that had been directed at him.
So
we can start at the vitriol that's been directed at you for your polls.
It's not all vitriol, but let's see. For a long time, I had a pinned post on the Facebook page for electiongraphs.com that basically said, hey, I've got a bunch of graphs. Click here and go see, you know. Now, that defaults, if you click through there, it defaults to whoever's got the most polling, which for quite some time has been Clinton versus Bush, because there's been the highest volume of polling in the most states, because Bush was considered there's been polling on that combination for 3 years. Okay.
Right.
You know, but so
First of all, the very first comment I got on this pinned post, it's not pinned anymore, by the way, but was actually a very positive one. Somebody who stumbled on the site and was like, hey, this is great. Thank you very much. Awesome.
Sure.
But yep. Then yeah. The next one, where does Trump fit into this? And so I post a standard response. You can select any Democratic and Republican, and you can see, and here's a link to Clinton versus Trump. Then the next one, all caps. Why are all your graphs with Bush and Clinton? You look like you are rigging things, and it seems like your page is full of crap. We are tired of the same old losers making us losers. To hell with Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. And that same guy sent a message right around the same time to the page.
Yeah.
I clicked like on this page, but I can see now that it is not a legitimate page. It is biased as can be for Bush or Clinton. Either one is okay with you as long as you have your anti-American candidate. Well, I am unliking this page right after this post. You are communist idiots, and I am a true lover of America, the greatest country ever, and you want to destroy it. Not for me, so goodbye, Trump for president. By the way, that was all caps, no punctuation.
Nice! And sweet!
And several words misspelled.
Yes!
And so, and then the next comment was, go Trump! And then I had, I agree, this page is bunk. It is rigged by the establishment pukes. I don't buy it one bit. It's the establishment spin going on here. Establishment versus the people, 2016.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're the establishment over here, because as all of you know, we've got, you know, we did our trilateral commission meeting lately, and we came up, you know, we did decide the outcome of this
anyway,
already.
Anyway, the point of this is actually very interesting, is the Trump folks are out there, and they're angry, and they're paying attention. They're finding little dinky sites, like my election graph site. I mean, it's not dinky. I'm very proud of my site. But
it's not dinky, no. It's small. We're not Huffington Post.
I'm not Huffington Post. I'm not Nate Silver. It's a small little site.
Right.
And you know, they're finding it and bothering to do these comments on there. Nobody else is. It's the Trump guys who are all riled up. They're excited because they finally have someone speaking for them.
But here's the thing about that. You know, and last time around.
Yes.
You know, I made this that we were talking about in the last election cycle. You'd go around, everybody had all these Romney stickers. Romney, Ryan, yeah. You know, they've got the momentum, they got the thing. You know, nobody would put out an Obama sticker, almost anybody. And then the election came around, bam. You know, they were just the noisemakers. You know?
Yes, and that's one thing you always have to keep in mind, is the loudest people are not always representative of what everything that's going on.
And it goes back to something. Of course, now I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, but I had given quite a lot of what I thought was useful information that I can't fucking repeat right now.
Oh, don't worry, guys. It was all bullshit. So go ahead.
Yes, it's probably, I'm sure. But they also, so we're looking at this polling data that there is, you know, and some stuff. Well, one of the things that I was looking at in the poll was how many people identified that they had been following the election actively. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. You know, the percentage is still quite small who said that got to the poll and said, "Hey, how have you been following? What's going on?" And most of the people, I think it was, if I could find it again, I mean, it was like 70+% of the people not paying attention.
And this still also, when you look at the Iowa and New Hampshire polls, that's also a thing that historically, if you look at what's happened in previous cycles, the majority of people don't make up their mind until the last 7 days before the primary or caucus. Yeah. And so there's a lot of volatility there. There have been a number of circumstances in both Iowa and New Hampshire
where the person who was in the lead in the polls 1 week before did not end up winning.
Yep.
That's why we always say, like, you know, it's not predictive yet. It shows where people are right now, but things can change quickly. And especially when you're talking about primary polling, because you're talking about lower turnout and you're talking about people who are who really are considering multiple choices. Like when you're talking about the general election, most people know pretty quickly, are they a Democrat or are they a Republican? Or
a Republican. That's right. Yes.
Whereas in the Republican primary, let's say,
that's a lot tougher question.
You know, you're choosing between several people that potentially are possible, and so it's much more fluid. It's much more much easier to go back and forth between some of these guys. And so, yeah, you do see a lot more volatility in primary polling.
What I love is some of the questions in here. For example, would you rather have a Republican nominee for president who is willing to compromise some of their positions with Democrats in Congress in order to get things done, or will stick to their positions even if it means not getting much done? 60% of them said willing to compromise, and I'm like, gosh, you got Trump in first place, and you want willing to compromise?
So there are a couple other things from our missing deleted segment that I will bring up that were interesting to talk about. One was Yvonne pointed out a great deal of volatility in Trump primary polls. He was looking specifically at Iowa, I believe.
Yes.
And showing that, you know, whereas somebody like Cruz was pretty consistent in their polling numbers across multiple polls, Trump was like all over the place, like from 19 to 35, you know, and very volatile. And I pointed out that a number of people, this is not an observation I'm making directly, but a number of people have pointed out that a lot of that is actually, if you start looking at the type of polls and separating out live polls where actual human being calls you and talks to you versus robo polls where you have, you know, an automated system that says, you know, press 3 if you like Trump. And there's a fairly consistent pattern where Trump does much better in the robo polls than he does in the in-person polls. And that's not really, you don't see that kind of separation with most of the other candidates. And it's been pointed out that that's a pattern that's also been seen in a variety of European elections where you've had sort of rightist, nativist, anti-immigrant type of candidates have also shown that kind of pattern, which is leading a few people to say that because in those European cases, the robo polls actually ended up being more accurate than the in-person
polls. Which didn't used to be the case. This is one of the things, like, you know, Sam, that historically, like before, you know, those polls were usually the most inaccurate ones, which is why a lot of organizations usually drop those out when they did an actual analysis. And that's been something that's been changing. But I don't know what the hell they really changed in the methodology to make it be more accurate, but they have been.
There are a variety of potential factors there, but I'd also mention this is one of the big differences between the Real Clear Politics averages and something weird's happening. What the hell? Hold on. No, we're still recording. I'm just confused. A bunch of things just quit.
Huh?
Okay. I'm back. I'm here. It stopped. Whatever was doing. Oh! My Mac is trying to install a system update. It's trying. It's trying to reboot.
No!
It's trying to reboot.
Wait!
I think I stopped it.
Okay.
It usually doesn't do these anyway, whatever. It's like, I'm busy. I'm actually using my computer right now. God damn it. Yes. There was a Mac OS X update that arrived yesterday or something that it's trying to install. Anyway, as I was saying, one of the differences between RealClear Politics and Pollster is RealClear Politics tries to stick with older, traditional, established polling that's live calling in their averages, whereas Pollster just by default throws in everything. They actually offer a lot of customization tools where you can pick and choose what kind of polls you want to include, and you can see how the averages change. But as an example, Trump on RealClear Politics is 30.4%. On Pollster, he's at 35.8%. He gains like 5% by including those other polls. And so you do see that effect. It's interesting. And the speculation, of course, and Yvonne rightly pointed out, this is speculation. I don't know that there's a lot of hard research on this, but is that people are just more reluctant to tell a live person that they like Trump than they are press three if you like Trump.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is that I was thinking, you know, I don't know. It's like, or is it the opposite? I mean, I don't know that they tell a right life person really what they think, but, you know, on the phone,
they
they'll
decide
just fucking
to screw
like,
with it.
It's a screw, fuck with it, you know, when you're actually like punching a number on the phone.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're like, oh, God, I got a robocall. Great, beautiful. Yeah, I'll just say I fucking like Trump. Here, boom.
Yeah.
You know?
But it is useful to point out that Trump's margin is greater when you include the robo polls, but he's ahead either way. I mean, he's still significantly ahead no matter what.
Right. Yeah.
Which brings me to the other thing that I wanted to make sure to mention here, is that I did an update. I mentioned electiongraphs.com. There's the update I did just a few hours ago as we're recording this is entitled Trump First Look, Do Not Underestimate. And this is, you know, I generally make comments about the top five best polled candidate combinations. And until now, you know, the other candidates just had, you know, Bush had more, Rand Paul had more. All of these guys had significantly more polling results than Trump. And he's just now catching up to the point where we can say, okay, he's got a comparable volume of polling with all these other guys. So let's start looking at him and see where we stand. I encourage you guys to look at the poll, look at it. It's linked from electiongraphs.com, or you can go to ablesmay.com. It was posted on December 10th. The bottom line here is if you look at the numbers of again, averaging all the state polls and seeing where we are right now, Clinton does beat Trump, but not by a huge margin. It has Clinton winning by 38 electoral votes. And I basically continue the conversation that Yvonne and I had last week on the show and saying, look, it is indeed possible. It is certainly possible that Trump implodes, that all kinds of people find him just completely unacceptable, and that we do get, you know, some sort of Clinton landslide in that combination. But from what we are seeing so far, with all the caveats that Yvonne just laid out, it's very, very early, people aren't paying attention, blah, 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 all of these things. With all those caveats, right now, every single poll that is Clinton versus Trump shows, yes, it does show Clinton winning, but not by landslide margins, just by a little bit, and a little bit small enough that you could easily see it disappearing. So in my analysis, I have the tipping point, which is essentially, you know, what the margin is in the state that pushes the winner over the edge, at 2.4%. A 2.4% lead is the kind of lead that could be wiped out overnight with just a few people changing their minds. It only takes 1.2% of people changing their minds to wipe out a 2.4% lead. It could be wiped out by the undecideds all breaking towards Trump. It could be wiped out by a systematic polling bias where people were not willing to say they supported Trump. All of those kinds of things could easily go away. And also, if you talk about over the course of a campaign, yes, it's possible that over the course of a campaign, everybody realizes how much of a blowhard Trump is and how toxic he is. And they all, like, you know, gravitate towards Clinton. However, as we mentioned in that, or did we mention it this time around?
I don't fucking remember.
So there was another poll that Yvonne pointed out that combined people's the New York Times and CBS did a poll where they asked people if people were concerned or scared about Trump becoming president. And 64% of people fit into that category.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, my God, 64% are concerned or scared. There's no way he can possibly win, until you realize they asked the same thing about Clinton and she got 57%.
Right.
So it's like, OK, if you put them head to head, who knows how that's going to wash out?
Right.
You know, and over the course of the campaign, like I said, you could get all these people deciding that, oh, yeah, it's Clinton. But you can't exclude the possibility that, you know, Clinton has a whole lot of negatives either. As well, she may hit some various bumps in the road that make things look worse. The economy may hit a rough spot. Trump, you know, has shown himself very good in the primaries at finding just the place to, like, sort of prod someone to make them look bad. And he could be doing that to Clinton at the same time, to sort of turn away people on the fence. There are a lot of things that could happen to move things in Trump's direction. And one thing I didn't mention in my post, but a number of people have pointed out, is all the evidence essentially has Trump doesn't believe a damn thing. He says whatever he thinks will help him at the moment. And so if we actually get to the scenario where he wins the nomination, you could easily see him pivoting on a dime, tossing some of this stuff and trying to become more centrist. And you know, you can see him criticizing, you could see him saying in the general election campaign, well, you know, Hillary, I supported single player health plans.
Right. Trump, I believe anything.
You
put this, a blog post by Scott Adams, the guy who writes Dilbert, about
I tweeted Trump's, a link to this, so you guys can go
he
look.
Tweeted a link to this about Trump's style, and that, you know, it made sense what Scott Adams was you know, explaining that, you know, because I gotta be honest with you, in a lot of negotiations I use the same thing: stake out the extreme position. Just say something, you know, ask for off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then get him to talk you down to whatever you're actually bargained for. And look, honestly, to Trump, it's working. This is what I'm doing. I'm going out there. I'm thinking the most extreme position. I'm throwing that out. Fuck it. You know what? I just sucked the air out of the entire conversation.
Yep.
Everybody's just talking about me. Because
bingo.
If I say something reasonable, paying attention. Let me just say the most crazy bad shit, you know, proposal that I could throw out there. And then, you know, they're all going to be just talking about me.
Yep. And we've been talking about this for months, too. It's his pattern. He can move so quickly on these things. He says the outrageous thing. By the time everybody reacts to it, he's moved on to the next outrageous thing. And, you know, nobody goes back. And I should point out this Scott Adams series. It's on blog.dilbert.com. Scott Adams has actually been doing a series of these posts going back several months, all the way till September. Before Trump was even, like, in the lead nationally, he predicted that Trump would still be in the lead at the end of the year. He actually predicted that Trump will win the nomination, and he predicted that Trump will be the next president. Not because he believes in anything Trump says, but he says, I know how Trump works. I know, he calls him a master manipulator, and he's been talking about the various techniques that Trump is using against his opponents and in terms of driving the conversation, and basically saying he's just doing it in an incredibly masterfully way to drive everything in his direction, whether you like it or not. And I it's been a very interesting series of posts, so I highly recommend it. Go look at blog.dilbert.com and look up the Trump Persuasion series. I believe he's actually got a keyword or a hashtag that you can bring up to see all of them. It's a very, very interesting series of posts. And I think it that ties back to my point in the blog post I made, which is basically, look, you know, all the kinds of people, including our friend here, Mr. Bo, have said, you know, hey, if Trump wins the nomination, it's a Democratic landslide. It's all over. Clinton wins. This is like whatever. And I just want to put out.
I say that because explain why I say that. Because number one, okay, there are far more registered Democrats than there are Republicans, number one. Number two, the groups that he's alienated enough that have the biggest negatives against him are so large that there is just no way that I think that he can overcome those negatives. Okay, all right. No fucking Democrat is going to vote for him. It's a real registered Democrat. And you take all the groups that he's insulted, none of those are going to fucking vote for him either. And he can't win when you've got like 65% of women saying that they hate his guts. 80% of Latinos saying they hate his guts. 80% of blacks hating your guts. Nobody has won that way. Okay?
So and here's the thing. You are absolutely right. Those are good points to make. But there's a lot that hinges on turnout too. So like, for instance, you could have, okay, they're not going to vote for Trump, but if they don't like Hillary either, they might stay home. And then it's about who shows up.
No, but at the same time, it could turn into the opposite. They're scared so much of him that it's going to drive the turnout up because there's no fucking way they want him.
It could. But my point is just in terms of the narrative that it's going to be a Democratic landslide if Trump wins the nomination. So far, the evidence isn't there of that. Now, Clinton is ahead. By all the different measures, Real Clear Politics has her ahead by 3.3% against Trump. I was mentioning I have her ahead by 38 electoral votes or 2.4% in the tipping point state. But those are not blowout margins. Those are close. And so and if you look at the number of states that are close, you can see it would only take a few percent to tip that over the edge. So as much as, yeah, all these groups are alienated, you don't think those people, when you call them up on these polls, aren't saying I'm voting for Trump. They're already saying they're not going to vote for Trump. But you still have Trump showing up as close, you know, Clinton winning, but Trump close, not a blowout. And that could change. That very well could change. Trump could implode. There are all kinds of things that could happen. I mean, hell, he may not even win the nomination. We're sort of jumping ahead a couple steps there. But if he wins the nomination, certainly it is within the realm of possibility that we have a Clinton landslide. Right now, in using the averages I have, Clinton's best case is winning by 156 electoral votes, which isn't quite like Reagan-Mondale proportions, but it's still a nice, healthy win. But it's still very much in the possibility that it would be a nail biter, and we might get to, you know, the day before the election and be like, you know, Clinton's probably going to win. But Trump might pull it out.
We're still biting our nails all the way to the end.
Yeah, I mean, so like, I think the people who are going, you know, if there are Democrats out there saying, ha, 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 look at the Republicans, I wish Trump wins because we're going to blow him out of the water. My message in my blog post is basically underestimate Trump at your own peril. You know, you may be right. You may be right. However, he has shown consistently over and over and over again over the last few months since September when he took the lead in the polls that conventional wisdom can, in fact, be dead wrong. And it has been many times on him. Now, that could change tomorrow. But I
think that the thing is, like you said, I mean, he's, you know, and even we said about the numbers, he keeps staying in that range of numbers, you know, and the other part is the other part that I saw. It's like, so he has the support he has. But even you asked the Republicans, okay, great, you picked this other guy. Who's your second choice? He's one of the lowest likelihoods for them to pick the second choice even to get the damn nomination. Now, it doesn't mean that even with the numbers that he's got, he still can't get it. But it's like there seems to – I mean, amongst the Republicans, he is incredibly, incredibly polarizing even inside the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
And forget about the Democrats. Just inside the Republican Party.
And that is a natural segue to one other thing before we wrap up this long segment, which is there were news reports in the last 24 hours that a number of important Republican Party leadership types have started to have meetings on what to do if we end up in a brokered convention scenario. Now, this does not mean there's going to be a brokered convention. It's just prudent to sort of plan ahead a little bit. But more so than we have had, I mean, every cycle we start talking about brokered conventions around this time of year and into the first few months of the primary cycle, we start talking about, well, what if the candidates who aren't in the lead can hold on just enough to not let the guy get a majority? But more so than in the other cycles, what we have now is a scenario where if Trump is ahead, you could see like the number two, number three, number four candidates saying, I can't drop out. I've got to fight this to the very end to try to keep him, even if I can't win myself.
So he can't fucking win.
Right. So that you might have like Cruz and maybe not Cruz because Cruz seems to like Trump, but maybe you have Rubio and Bush.
But he's banging. Well, I don't know about that. He's banging away about his religious non-credentials.
Okay, he started too recently. Until very recently, he was constantly sucking up to Trump. But maybe you get like these. Basically, we're talking Cruz, Rubio, and probably not Bush, but you never know. He might hang on just because he's got some money. But you could see these guys saying, okay, it's clear I can't win, but everybody who's not Trump has to hold on to the bitter end. We have to go through all 50 states and all the damn territories to get as many delegates as we could possibly manage so that we keep him from getting majority.
But here's a crazy thing about this, right? So we're talking about a broker convention. Look, if Bush read the same polling data I just did, what did he find out?
Tell me.
Okay, I'll give you the thing. The second choice of most people is Bush.
Well, not most people, 19% or
the majority.
Plurality.
Yes.
So, look, but if you have these people hanging on, the basic notion of that game is if you can manage to keep Trump from getting a majority and actually getting to the convention and going into a second, third, fourth ballot, then all of these delegates who come into the convention bound by primary and caucus results are free.
Yep.
They become absolute free agents that can do whatever the fuck they want.
Right.
And are susceptible to deal making.
Right.
And so you could literally have people going around trying to, wrangle these delegates one by one to try to bring them over to somebody else. And of course, in that scenario, it doesn't have to be somebody who bothered running either.
Yep.
So you could have a Romney scenario at the convention.
Not
like the party is really excited by Romney either. But if you get into a scenario where, it's Trump, or, you could see them doing all kinds of crazy stuff. You could see them going for, the person who came in fourth in the primary process, or somebody who didn't run at all. You could see all kinds of craziness. You can also see, because also a lot of these people, even if they're bound by the results of their primaries, The actual delegates are establishment kind of folks who go through the process of signing up and going through this process. It depends on the state. In some of the states, each candidate defines their own slate of people and they make sure that they're supporters and blah, blah, blah. In others, it's a little bit, it's different. It's all over the place. It's crazy. But in any case, you get a lot of people who become free agents who may or may not be all that attached to the person they were originally attached to. And you could see the convention changing their rules on the fly. So there's a set of rules that's been adopted for how all of this is going to play out. But once you get to the convention, if you've got this kind of crazy scenario,
everything goes, you know, any rules go, you can toss all the whole book out.
You could,
I guess.
You could, if you get a majority of the convention to agree to go along. Right. And you might not get a majority of the convention picking a particular candidate, but you might get them adjusting the rules in certain ways, maybe, kind of, sort of. So it opens up all kinds of chaos, but then that ties into what we said before. If Trump comes in, let's say Trump comes in with 40% of the delegates into the convention and the closest person behind him is at 20%, and then the convention steals it away from him and gives the nomination to somebody else.
Third party.
There's no way in hell Trump's not running third party in that scenario. You could also see a scenario where the convention just can't come to a decision and they actually break apart. And like some of them say, well, fuck this, we'll go have our own convention. And you end up running two candidates anyway. There are all kinds of craziness that happens now. All of the pundits are getting all excited about this. We're getting all excited about this. I have to do the usual reminder here that what usually ends up happening is the most boring possible outcome. You know, so, you know, we have,
but the thing is, you've got, honestly, we have a massive wild card, which, I mean, Trump is the wild card. I mean, the reality is that he's more than once already stated flat out, if they screw me, I'm going independent.
Yep.
I mean, which, and everybody knows, you know, it's just not a secret that the Republican establishment hates him.
Yes.
So you've got a real toxic combination there.
Right. I mean, there's potentially even conversations before the convention of if Trump is in the lead, changing the rules in such a way that even before the convention starts, you can start having some of this realignment that I was talking about. And of course, again, Trump would feel like he was getting screwed. And honestly, he would be getting screwed if that happened. But yeah, the most likely scenario is still the boring scenario. The boring scenario is that Trump starts to collapse, Rubio or somebody gets the nomination, they get a fairly clear lead, and then, you know, we have a normal convention, and then we move on to a general election that's also fairly normal. But come on, you know, the interesting scenarios are just so much fun to think about. And honestly, they're more likely this time around than they have been in a generation.
I mean, this has been like, really, even in the other cycles, it just wasn't this. I mean, I think,
because let's look at the scenario. Santorum hung on a long time in 2012. Ron Paul hung on a long time in 2012. But
none of those were saying, oh, we're going third party. You know,
well, none of them were, but also at a certain point when they realized, you know, there's no possible way they could win anymore, they're like, okay, we're done. We're suspending our campaign, or I'm dropping out, whatever. You know, whereas, I mean, Ron Paul didn't, he's kept his to the end, but you know, you still, whereas this time you have a real incentive possibly there for people who know they're going to lose to not drop out. And continue fighting to the end. And so we'll see. Of course, the other scenario is Trump goes through and has a clear majority. And all of these guys are, you know, there's not even a possibility of a brokered convention. Trump's just got it. And if that's what ends up playing out, again, you've got all of these people. A bunch of Republicans came out this week after Trump made his comments about not letting any Muslims into the country ever anymore or whatever. He walked it back a little bit afterwards. But the, you know, you had like Paul Ryan, for instance, coming up and saying, you know, this is not our party. This is not what we represent. These are you know, horrible comments and is not representative of the Republican Party. Well, if he wins the nomination, will you support him? Well, yes.
Yeah.
And so the question is, do we ever get to the point where some of these Republicans start saying, because right now you have them say he's not going to win the nomination. He's not going to win the nomination. He's not going to win the nomination.
They're just all telling. I mean, we've been saying that. Let's be clear.
They're saying things like, I will support the nominee. Trump will not be the nominee, and avoiding the question of if Trump is the nominee, what will you do? At some point, the question is, do we start seeing some of these candidates saying, you know, no, if Trump is the nominee, I will not support the Republican nominee. We haven't yet seen that. Right. If we do start seeing that, that's like one of the key indicators that a schism may be coming.
Right.
But so far we haven't. But so far, I think, you know, everybody's in denial here. Now, I gave my odds last week, 30% Trump, 30% Rubio, 20% Cruz, 20% somebody else, and which is still, to be clear, a 70% chance that it's not Trump.
Right.
But honestly, after this last week, after his comments on on Muslims, immigration, and the response I've seen to it, I'm ready to up his chances to 40%.
So wait, you think that this actually gave him improved his chances,
yes,
not reduced them?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Well, it's a little. We haven't seen many polls that are after his comments yet, but I've seen a lot of polls that are polling viewpoints among the Republican primary voters about whether or not they agree with these type of comments. And the percentage of Republicans who agree with these comments is high, in the 65-70% range.
Well, that's not what I got to tell you something. I got today a newsflash saying, well, it may have been generally in the U.S.
Yes, no, that's different. I'm not talking about Republicans.
There was a Wall Street Journal news alert that I got today that was a poll in the U.S. where, I mean, the number was close to 70% of Americans were against what Trump said about barring Muslim,
well, yes,
you know, people coming to the U.S.
Again.
Which is a huge percentage.
But
okay?
You're talking Americans,
you know,
not Republicans.
Now, I know that doesn't translate directly into right. That doesn't translate into Republican voters. Okay, all right, especially for the nomination. I get that.
So here. Wait. This is North Carolina specifically. There was a PPP poll in North Carolina. So North Carolina may not be the whole country, of course, but they asked a few of
definitely
these questions.
Not.
Well, North Carolina is actually, if you look at the results in the last few elections,
they've been close. I agree.
It's right in the middle. So, of Republicans in North Carolina, 48% want a national database of Muslims, to 33% opposed. 42% agree with Donald Trump's comments about the thousands of Arabs in New Jersey who supposedly cheered on 9/11. Only 20% think that didn't happen.
How many think it didn't happen? How many think it actually happened?
42% versus 26 who don't. And the rest, and the rest, I guess, say they don't know.
Okay. So
35% want to shut down all the mosques in the United States.
What percentage again?
35. Compared to 33% who are opposed.
Well, let me put it to you this way.
Let me finish. There are a couple more good ones. GOP voters as a whole, by a 41% of GOP voters, do think Islam should be legal in the United States. But 32% think it should not be. It just should not be legal at all in this country.
Wow. Those are scary numbers.
And so, again, this is only North Carolina. This is not national, but it gives you the flavor of this. This is not, and the numbers, by the way, on all of those things are even more extreme if you look only at Trump supporters, which should be obvious. But even if you look at all Republicans, you know, there is a significant group support for these positions. And I think his odds went up because I think exactly the kind of dynamics that we were talking about before where, you know, he's,
but I think it may be helping for the nomination, but yet at the same time, it's the same thing. Well, it's kind of like, you know what, it's, you know, what we talked about, used to talk about the pandering to the base.
Yes.
This is not the traditional Republican base, but this is the reality. By doing this pandering, what you're doing is creating more polarizing, that you're alienating the groups that you really need to really win the general election once again by pandering to the nut jobs. OK,
yeah.
Well, and actually, a lot of them are nut jobs. A lot of them, you know, in this case, he is pandering to fears that a lot of people in the U.S. have.
Yes.
OK. And but still, you wind up alienating so many other people that it becomes virtually impossible to win the general election.
Well, and again, you know, he's going to have a chance to pivot. Although, I mean, these things are so, it's going to be hard to pivot. But if anybody can do it, Donald Trump can do it.
A campaign war chest that the Democrat will have a couple, you know, say I'm going to guarantee $300-400 million, right? I mean, you're going to see the airwaves and everything. Forget, because the Republicans are scared of doing this against them. Okay, yeah. Right? But the Democrats aren't going to be.
No.
I mean, you can see the fucking commercials, all right? The hammering, all right? Okay? One clip after another of all these fucking things the guy has said. Okay, all right? My God. Who the fuck that's black, Hispanic, immigrant, whatever the fuck, is going to vote for this man? Okay? I mean, all you got to do, I can fucking put together a goddamn video right now. They'll just fucking like, I mean, I'll have the Democrats and all the fucking people jumping up and down, yeah, kill a motherfucker, after like 15 minutes of this.
But again, it's not just having them, not voting for Trump isn't enough. You have to actually get them to vote for Clinton.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I guarantee you, I'll have them riled up enough that there is no fucking way they're not going to show up to vote.
No, okay? I hear you. I hear you.
Okay,
but you know, if everybody goes in saying there's no way he can possibly win, maybe a bunch of those people will be like, "Ah, he's going to lose. Don't worry about it." And his people show up, and yours don't. Man, you know?
I think that they would have that attitude. I think they had that attitude in 2000 with like Bush Jr. Okay, all right. I think a lot of those people don't have that attitude anymore.
Yeah,
just he's just far more polarizing. Let's be clear. Than anybody that I've seen running.
Well, you know, with all this craziness, and we've been talking a long time now, that we're a few weeks away from our predictions show. So we're going to have to come up pretty damn quick.
Oh, fuck me.
with who do we think is
actually... Why did they push this damn primary so late?
So we're going to have to predict who we think is going to win the nomination on both sides.
Oh,
Is there going to be a third party running? And if so, is it enough to make a damn difference to anything? And who's going to be the next president?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to, you know, I think absent something crazy, we know what's happening on the Democratic side. But the Republicans, I mean, I don't think we're going to get a lot of clarity in the next 2.5 weeks to, you know, be really solid on any predictions there. But we'll do it anyway.
Okay.
Right. We'll be back after this, and I think we'll just do a quick lightning round, and we'll talk about the other stuff we were going to do a whole segment on is just a short lightning thing.
Yep.
And just imagine how much longer this would be if we had actually we'd actually recorded the segment the first time around. Because sometimes Yvonne and I just talk, you know? Anyway. We'll be back after this.
this is a break. Oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, we are back. Ugh. I was coughing a lot during the break there.
Yep.
And still I'm like, ah. Okay, so let's start off our lightning round by briefly this whole San Bernardino.
Santa Barbara was a soap opera on television.
It was also where Psych was set, the TV show.
Yep, so that's the thing. Maybe.
I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, San Bernardino. So it turns out that these guys. There was a radical Islamic radicalization kind of thing going on here. They apparently were both radical before they even got married. They met on some sort of like dating site and they connected over how they wanted to kill people and blow things up. And that's why they got married. Apparently, there's like one of the, you know, things, I guess when you're looking at your online dating profile, you're like, are you also a homicidal murderer? Sure.
So what is there some like, you know, radical dating.com or something, like whatever, find a radical, get, you know, go crazy, something, you know,
I don't know,
maybe.
But anyway, so there, now it's still a little bit unclear to me why he ended up targeting his workplace. It sounds like he had some plans for some other stuff, but then he got mad at somebody at work, and maybe he changed his plans and then decided to do this at work instead.
Okay, well, I guess, just remember not to piss off people at work, I guess. Jesus Christ, I mean, what the hell?
Apparently he tried to do something somewhere else a while back, and it didn't succeed, and there's a lot that's still unclear here. But one of the things that, happened in the first few hours after this was happening, it was all, you know, liberals talking about, here's another one of these gun violence, mass killing kinds of things. And, Alex, what's up, Alex? Snip, snip, snip. Yvonne?
Yes.
Okay. I'm back.
Okay.
Okay, we're back. Little meltdown. My son's having a little meltdown over homework. Anyway.
Want to do it?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
So where were we? We're talking about radicalized people.
We're talking about, you know, that he was the guy, he was radicalized.
Oh, and everything before we knew all these details. The left was all talking about gun control and mass shootings and all that kind of stuff. And then there's still that conversation, but the conversation rapidly switched
to terrorism.
And Obama gave a little speech where he basically, look, the bottom line of the speech was, we're already doing the things we need to do. Calm the fuck down.
He's right. I mean, it's reality.
And of course,
we can't stop every attack. I mean, the way that it happened.
And of course, he made some calls for additional gun control, which the only actual result of that is a crap ton of people bought guns last weekend.
Well, yeah, that happened anytime that a Democrat or somebody has won an election lately. There was like a chart that I saw with the spikes and everybody just buying, you know, going on gun buying like frenzies, you know.
I mean, Democrats should get a fucking clue on this. Every time they open their mouths about gun control, the only actual result of that is a lot more guns on the street. Which is exactly the opposite of what they intend.
So I don't know what the hell to do. I mean, the problem is that I know it's one of those things. It's counterintuitive, right? Okay, you know, you want to go out there, you want to try to explain to people why you shouldn't have the guns out there, right? But every time you talk about it, everybody's rushing out and like buying more of them. So I don't know. What do you do? Okay, you tell me. You said not to talk about it. Great. So what's plan B?
Well, you don't talk about like, let's add all these restrictions and we do this, we do that. No, you shut the hell up about it. You recognize that for a lot of people in this country, guns are very important to their way of life and their culture, and they feel very attached to them. Uh-huh. And you work a long game over the course of the next 50 to 100 years to change the culture.
100 years?
Yeah. To not do like legislative stuff to take people's guns, but instead you gradually change the culture so people don't want them in the first place.
Okay. Yes.
Well, because the other thing is all of the specific controls that often get talked about, like I don't want to repeat myself too much, but like, for instance, the assault weapon bans and things like that, they play very well to the liberal base. But if you look at the numbers, they're involved in a tiny portion of the thing. It's a waste. Like the things that would actually make a difference are the things that would affect sort of the normal people with their guns. You know, the things that go after these, sort of outliers, would actually have limited effect. Obama threw in the comments about gun control, but then the rest of his thing was really about like internationally, look, we're isolating these guys, we're attacking them, we're going after them, we're doing this, we're doing that. You know, we're taking it seriously, but we're not losing our cool over this. And, you know, what was pointed out by practically every Republican, but also some other folks, is like, look, what's happening here is you've got a whole lot of Americans that, rational or not, and for the most part, it's a fear of terrorism is irrational. It's a very, very tiny chance you will ever be affected by that compared to dozens and dozens of other ways you may get killed or maimed or whatever on an everyday basis. So it's actually completely irrational to be afraid of terrorism in the United States. However, people are scared shitless, and they want their president to sort of acknowledge that fear and quote unquote do something. Act like you're doing something, act like you care. And so, a bunch of people are pointing out that, you know, when Obama comes out and he's calm and he's cool and collected and he says we're doing this, this, and this, fairly limited things, but we believe they're effective, blah, 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 that, you know, all of these people who are scared interpret that as he's doing weakness. Jack shit.
Right.
Yeah, they interpret it as weakness. Whereas, you know, I looked at that and said, well, that's exactly what the hell he should be doing. He should be keeping his cool. He should be looking at these things rationally. He should be compared.
Listen, in response to an incident like that, nobody is going to be happy with any of your responses.
Yeah.
For example, I mean, people forget. Yeah, we had look at our brilliant response to 9/11, right? Okay, all right. I mean, yeah, we went out, we declared war, we went out there, blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, for some reason, like, the fucking moron Bush said, you know, Iraq is part of the axis of evil, blah, blah, blah. Fucking, and you know, what have we created? Honestly, we created ISIS. That's what we fucking did. Because Saddam Hussein was still around, we wouldn't have this shit going on. For all that, you know, and so that's reality.
Not that we're saying we liked Saddam.
Because I didn't, but the reality is that it's not like, what did we do? We got rid of, you know, one problem to create a worse one in the end. Okay. Right. So, you know, give me a fucking break. Okay. And, you know, the other thing is that everybody keeps saying like something about Islam. Oh, the radicals, blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody keeps forgetting what the hell happened the previous week before San Bernardino. some religious nut job, okay, went to a Planned Parenthood site, took out and fucking started shooting at a whole bunch of fucking people. Why? Because he was in court today ranting around, I'm here to save the babies!
Yeah.
So, give me a fucking break. Okay? Yes. These two people are radicalized. Yes, they happen to be Muslim. Absolutely. But you know what? What about this other fucking asshole? Why aren't they all scared shitless of this moron?
There you go. Okay, so enough of that. Let's
Should we start banning a whole bunch of white anti-fucking, like, abortion people flying into the fucking U.S.? Idiots.
I mean, it's easily pointed out that, like, I mean, a lot of people have been making comparisons in, like, you know, who radicalized that guy?
Right!
You know?
I'm gonna say Carly Fiorina!
Yeah, some people were blaming Carly.
Yes!
although for anybody in anti-abortion circles, they knew about that video long before Carly mentioned it. But
look, they do. But what I'm saying is, who went out there and started fucking, like, pounding about it, you know, to everybody? You know? I mean, give me a break.
Anyway, so the movie, moving on, a couple quick other lightning round things. I watched the movie Rear Window from 1954. I don't know if you've ever watched this.
Yes, I did, but a long, long, long time ago.
And I actually found it was slowly paced. It's an Alfred Hitchcock movie. It's somewhat slowly paced, but I found it oddly compelling. It was a
compelling movie. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it has the basic conceit is the guy is stuck in his house, in his apartment, because he's got a broken leg, and he spends all his time looking at what the neighbors are doing through their windows, which is actually kind of creepy. But he ends up thinking that one of his neighbors murdered his wife, and then you see what happens from that point forward. And I liked it. It was slow. It was old fashioned, but it was compelling. It was a good movie. I hear they remade it much later with what's his name, Christopher Reeve. After Christopher Reeve was in a wheelchair. I have not seen the remake. I might put it on my list for someday. But this was good. This was good. It was a good movie. I liked it. Okay. Do you got one?
I was going to mention that, you know, Argentina elected a new president. And, you know, the thing that happened, like, which I guess would be something like probably you would expect a guy like Donald Trump to do. The old president that lost the election basically started behaving like a 4-year-old and refused to attend the inauguration of the new president, which had actually never happened before. I mean, she started arguing about, okay, because there was a process and there was a protocol to do it. It's a way that but he had done it. And she started saying that she wanted to do it differently, that I wanted to do it this way, and I wanted to do it that way. I mean, the president elect actually go to court and have a court establish this is the process. This is, and as a matter of fact, it turned so bad that actually her term ended on basically a court decision that said that, listen, okay, so you know what? Listen, your president is going to be over at midnight, okay, on the end of the inauguration. The vice president's actually going to be acting president until the time of the official inauguration, which I thought was just, you know, I mean, crazy, but, you know, but that's what happened, you know. Just very interesting. So look at a preview of, like, if you get somebody like President Trump or somebody like that, kind of things that you could expect.
There you go. Okay. Another one. This is, I guess, last week. What do you think of Zuck's big charity donation? Zuckerberg, the...
I'm like shocked at all the people that have been saying all this negative shit about it. You know, there's a whole bunch of people in Europe writing, oh, he's just doing this as a way to avoid taxes. I'm like, that's the only way you can avoid taxes in the U.S.? Like, seriously?
Mention what he actually did. What did he
do? Well, but my understanding was that he took a whole bunch of his money and he didn't actually create a nonprofit for it. What he said is he's creating it into a foundation that's going to be donating the money. And he didn't put it into a nonprofit because nonprofits have certain specific restrictions and other things to do that you have to do in order to do that. And as you donate the money away, well, yeah, it becomes tax. That part becomes tax deductible. But my point is, people were railing against him about the fact that he didn't put it into a nonprofit and he didn't want to follow the rules about that. And I think that was the big thing where people were like railing against it, that he just decided on a different model in order to give his money away. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, the guy's giving his fucking money away. Let him do it however fucking way he wants. You know, I'm like, so what? What the fuck do you care? Okay. You know, I don't get it. I would read the criticism. I'm like, okay. I'm like, you know, first you're saying, you know, he's a capitalist pig like Gorgeous and Buddy. Then he says he wants to give the money away, and he says, well, I'm going to give it away in this method that I prefer, and you're pissed off too. I'm like, fuck.
I've heard a couple other people, you know, he did this on the birth of his first daughter, I guess.
Correct.
And a couple other people have said, well, happy birthday. Thank you. I gave away your inheritance. But, you know, hey, don't worry. She'll be fine.
I'm sure she'll be fine.
She'll be fine.
So, you know.
She will be a very wealthy woman no matter what happens here.
Exactly. Give me a break. So what? I mean, you know, geez. Plus, you know, I you know, good. I mean, actually, you know, it's like, what the hell anyway? It's too much money to be, you know, passing on anyway. It's not a bad thing. I mean, people don't need that kind of, you don't need that much money to live. Nobody does.
Okay. I don't got anything else.
All right, so we're done.
I know that's very proper grammar.
Yep.
I don't got anything else.
It's perfect. I think it's great.
So that's the show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. As usual, like us on Facebook and tell your friends. Share it. We like new listeners and we like your comments. Comment on Facebook or you can contact us on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, Abulsme. Yvonne is at IMBO. That's IMBOU. We love to hear from you. We love to do a back and forth and discussion with our audience. If you have any anything you want to criticize about what we said, we'd love to hear it, and we'll respond to you on a future show or online.
You can even say it in caps.
You can say it in all caps, like my commentators on electiongraphs.com. And if you want to comment on electiongraphs.com, please feel free to do that as well. The Facebook page for that is Election Graphs. You can find that easily enough. And we appreciate all comments, even the crazy people. But for all the crazy people who are specifically criticizing me because I didn't talk about Donald Trump, I just did a big post about him, and it was actually fairly favorable to Trump's chances. So read it and give me some positive Trumpy comments for once.
Ah, you crazy bastard.
There you go. That's a show. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
And now I'll go comfort my son.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Bye.